I'm speaking with Dan Severn today for Cageside Seats. My first question is, can you tell me how you made the transition from amateur wrestling to professional wrestling?
Okay, it was probably harder for me to make the transition from amateur wrestler to professional wrestler, going from professional wrestler to, no holds barred cage fighter. That was actually pretty easy for me because my life has been a life of competition. So doing that portion was easy. The hard part was going from amateur wrestler to professional wrestler because now they can actually live good without, cinching down from tightly onto a birthday bridge or something along those lines.
Okay, how did you learn about UFC?
The UFC, basically, I lived in Coldwater, Michigan at that same time, since fall of 91, and the show world did not have the pay-per-view capabilities. This basically was brought to my attention by a friend of mine out of the Detroit area, and he watched his first couple, and he said, "You know, I think about doing this," and then he just kind of that's kind of how I was first introduced to it, and that's kind of how I started to pursue it.
Were there any parts of pro wrestling you had difficulty adapting to?
I would say the term that I had professional wrestling is that actually for a long period of time, you would be more nervous in professional wrestling match as opposed to doing a new old sport or mixed martial arts match. This is almost a contradiction in terms, but in the real athletic contest, you have to go out there and get results. In professional wrestling, you have to put your body into somebody else's hands. You got to know what to do with your body, because if you screw up, not them will be served, you deserve. Well, one of the professional wrestlers, that was a hard thing for me to swallow at times.
How were the early UFC promoters to deal with?
The UFC has had three different ownerships. I have dealt with actually all three of them. I dealt more with probably ownership number two, when it was owned by the New York-based company, the Semaphore Entertainment Group, by Berowitz.
When was the last time you dealt with UFC?
They ended up bringing me out to one of their events just this past year. I mean, that was probably the most recent thing I've been involved with. I needed an email or phone call to business because I'm still trying to help other athletes transition.
When did you learn you were going to become NWA World Champion?
I won that, I believe it was sometime in the 90s, before there was Smoky Mountains wrestling that was interfered by Hugh Cornette was basically the gentleman that was ended up by Smoky Mountain Vito, the gentleman that I wrestled to win his belt. Sometime in 94, because in 95 was when I won my very first UFC, and Dennis Caruso brought the belt out, the NWA belt out. I was somewhat of a touchy subject with the UFC, because the fact that I was a professional wrestling champion. And he then brought out there in the contest, where basically it was doing promoting the violence and no rules and weight classes. And so they were a little bit torn on that, but because of one of the accomplishments from before, I had leverage.
I remember back in 95, I was about 15, and I saw an Inside Wrestling cover with you with the NWA title. And you were actually one of my favorite wrestlers before I was actually ever able to see you on TV.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, it's, I'm like a throwback from days gone by, really, is what I am. A lot of people said I should have been wrestling with the likes of Bruno Sammartino and Lou Spez and, those kind of individuals.
That's what I was telling a friend about watching your matches. That it really had this vibe of like when I'd watch the classic wrestling ESPN, that it always felt like it was actually a fight. Well, like you didn't think you were watching a show, you thought you were watching a guy trying to actually win a match.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I only wish I had been brought into the professors in business at a different time era, because I think, the first time I met, like, Lufez from that Orange Band, you know, he really was watching me a great deal, and he really enjoyed watching the scientific, mechanical way that I did think that created leverage, and, it was actually quite an honor then when it was Lufez who presented me with my very own NWA belt at one of the California Alley banquets, you know, for all that I did for that organization and bringing a lot of recognition to professional wrestling, because I was kind of like that first professional wrestler that crossed back into, the no holds barred mixed martial arts before, you know, the Brock Lesnar and the Bobby Lashley and, you know, that kind of stuff.
With Brock, since you were like the first pro wrestler to win UFC, do you think Brock Lesnar gets unfairly bashed for being a former WWE champion?
I really don't think he'll be bashed for it. He'll always have certain naysayers on the things, but I don't think there'll be held anything against it. What he accomplishes in the MMA world is what he'll more or less be recognized for.
When you were NWA champion, how did the NWA, did they pick your bookings for you, or did you find your own and then you had to ask them?
Well, basically, they made the bookings for me. I mean, again, upon availability, though, because, I mean, I was still doing a lot of other things other than just doing professional wrestling, but they wanted to utilize the status I had and the notoriety, and that was kind of a hard thing because I still was doing amateur wrestling, camps and clinics and doing amateur wrestling matches, so that was still kind of a tough period of time because I stayed so busy for so many years doing things like that.
What led to you being booked on the King of the Deathmatch card versus Tarzan Goto? Was this your first time working in a hardcore match?
Yes.
I
had never been involved with something quite that bizarre. I've been on a few different shows where I've seen this kind of stuff taking place. I'm like, well, that's a tough match to follow now, right? Because people see, fluorescent bulbs being smashed over people's heads, getting hit with the barbed wire bats, stuff like that. I'm thinking, man, how are we supposed to follow that and just feel them wrestling? Right? I mean, to me, it's like, that's a whole different entity in itself. But, I mean, to be involved with Tarzan Goto, I did not know that years later that would be looked upon as such a career highlight there for myself in being involved with a hardcore match.
I saw the match, but I've been looking for the match for years because I saw a picture in Pro Wrestling Illustrated around like 96, and I actually wanted to see the match, and other people would ask me while I was looking for a show because everybody else watches it looking for the Cactus Jack matches, and I would tell people, I said, I want to see the Dan Severn Tarzan Goto match, and when I actually saw it, I thought it was a great match.
It was definitely a funny match.
I thought it was, I just liked it because of the, it was just the contrast of styles. Like, you have one guy trying to throw a chair, then you got you, who's a real wrestler. I was just a huge fan of it. I've showed it to other people, and they really loved it, too.
It was just a contrast of styles. I mean, because we were out there dueling with chairs at one point in time there, too, so.
Okay, you said that UFC had a problem with you, with Dennis Caruso. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce his name.
You said it close enough. Caruso, yes.
Okay, he brought the NWA title on the UFC shows. When did they first find out about it?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, basically, I didn't want to totally surprise them. I mean, it was brought to their attention. It had some apprehension, but then when I told them the story about it, I said that, I'm out there to take care of business. But I was going to have one of the head promoters, one of the NWA, would be carrying the belt in the entourage, so that basically knowing that he's a part of the entourage and that, they had no problem with it then. I mean, I think it's just a way that them having to deal with me directly and come across with the type of person that I am with names. I mean, I'm not trying to exploit things in a bad way. I was just trying to exploit things in a good way.
My editor, he knows more about mixed martial arts than I do, because I haven't really seen, I've seen some of the, a lot more of the early UFC shows. But he knew some specific questions to ask. He wanted me to ask you about your second fight with Ken Shamrock. Mind you, I've never seen an actual fight myself. He said he got a bad, I think you, I heard you speak about it one time, and he didn't get a good reaction from the crowd.
Well, no, a lot of people did not like that match, and I think it was even chronicled old, and kind of like different book stuff I did, and they thought of as one of the worst matches in the UFC's history at that time. For being the marquee match, it not produced, but to me, in my Albert's opinion, I thought it was the most well thought out psychological match ever in UFC. To know that they had a 10,000 seat sellout, I think it was the biggest crowd at the time. And I'm thinking the crowd not liking this match. And they started booing. They did everything I had hoped they would do. Because, I mean, Shamrock, up to that point, kind of is always been more as a counter fighter. Unless you attack and then counterattacks you. And I thought, well, if I do the exact same thing, and I circle him, and I do basically what he's doing, nothing, the crowd is going to get rather restless. And they will start to bow, and I mean, they did the bowing, and even threw garbage in the gate.
So you were hoping
to... John McCarthy was even, with the referee, he was even an eyesight on my back on the outside, you know, they want us to say that he missed the fight. He actually stopped the match, pushed us back to restart us, and he's actually even cussing at us and saying that you guys came to fight, blankety blank, and fight by God, and as he pushed me back, I made a comment to him and go, John, just take your shirt off. I said, we'll make it a three-way death match. And I said, I can care less. I will never let the crowd rule me. There's a lot of on-chair quarterbacks. That's why I get rather passionate about that. There's a lot of on-chair quarterbacks that like to sit there and learn and stuff like that. To me, it's like that same guy. Climb inside the cage with me. Look across from me right there. And when the referee says this, I said, as I move towards him, I know I will see a puddle form at his feet. The only thing is that I'm kind of going on a few different things right there. Just, I take a great deal of pride in what I've done and what I've accomplished. And as far as I'm concerned, there's not another human being alive and or dead that has accomplished what I have accomplished in the professional wrestling, the mixed martial arts, no holds barred, and amateur wrestling circuit. In all three areas, I've been very successful. And the fact is, I'm lifetime chemical free, and I started certain things at a very late date in life. As I was WWF's oldest rookie ever at 40 years of age. I started a cage fighting career, basically, you know, I'm 36, getting ready to turn 37. Who starts a career at that age?
It's got to be a big transition.
The world record was 7 title belts. I have either 18 or 19 right now. So I mean, he's already fighting somebody else that can have any claim. I've done as many as 17 amateur wrestling matches in one day. Two different age groups, three weight classes per age group, winning 6 gold medals. 17 matches, like I said, one day. Find me another man that even come close to what I've done. I legitimately have over 100 state national earnings with titles and or records. No one else has done ever what I've done.
Well, it's got to be hard, you know, because people are booing, you know, but this is like a real fight that you're trying to win. You're not trying to put on a show for anybody.
Okay, the bottom line is, what are they going to remember? They're going to remember who won. And then when it boils down to me, like, I didn't change the rules about the time element. I guarantee you, you just changed the element of time. Let's face it did have to change in order for the UFC and for mixed martial arts, in order for it to continue to even exist, and so, like I said, the no holds barred here, it's gone. It'll just be something that's in the archives of history now. But people, the thing that I don't like is the fact that they almost try to bury it like it never existed. Well, at the same token, I think that the current UFC ownership, they should at least embrace it and say, this is our where we began, and this is what it is evolved to, and recognize some of the people from the past. You know, an old Lexi Goff, a Don Fry, a Keith Nasty, a Marco Huas, you know, a Steve Jenner. These people all did something for this sport, and yet no one knows who they are.
When I watch those old tapes, I always find those more entertaining than when I've tried to watch the current shows, because there was just something then, I really can't describe it, but it had this more out-of-control edge to it. Now, I don't know, it's not, I mean, there can be good fights. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of mixed martial arts. I mean, I can watch it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to. But when I'd watch those old tapes, there'd be fights, you know, and you'd really get into it, because I don't know, it's like, it would really just give off this larger-than-life air than I find it does now.
Yeah, I just broke up just a little bit on me, Victor. Sorry about that.
Okay, let me ask you, when were you first approached by the World Wrestling Federation?
I believe it was around 97, if I remember correctly. He did a phone both Kenner, Shamrock, and myself at that. Basically, about the same. Kenner went to work almost 1 year before I ever did with him because of, and he was, he put all his eggs into one basket. He worked exclusively for the WWF. Well, as I negotiated non-exclusivity because I was working for the NWA. There was like 35 different promoters in the NWA alone that I was working for at different times. On top of working for the WWF, even them basically I had a modified contract. I did not work the full 187 dates like everybody else did. I gave up, I negotiated 60 dates on an annual basis.
I can't think of anybody else that was ever really given a deal like that, so, I mean, it shows how in demand you were.
Well, I was, but at the same token, nothing ever materialized about it. There's been a few things, Victor, that I wish I had done differently in my career, but you can't. Whatever you did, you did. But there was, the WWF did not know how to utilize me. They were afraid, I think, in a lot of ways, to put any kind of a championship belt on me to give me any kind of a real push because they had no control elements over me. But at the same token, I don't think that they really ever knew what kind of a person I was to work with. To me, I'm still very much old school even now, but I was old school even in my young, in my career, to where a handshake and your word should mean something. It's a pretty much a lost commodity nowadays. Half the time, I don't know if I'm running a training facility or if I'm running a clothing school for young men because I'm trying to teach them how to conduct themselves in a better manner, how to speak properly, and the fact that you actually shake another man's hand and you look them in the eye. These are things that are lost.
Yeah, you can really tell people because, it's not just in wrestling. You look at everywhere else in life, you really can't hardly take people by their word now.
No, not at all. That's a quite a shame.
Why were you split from Jim Cornette so soon? Because I thought y'all were a really good pairing.
Well, it wasn't me that split up again. It was the creative chief. I mean, literally, Jim had lots of good ideas. He was so frustrated with the creative chief. He goes, Andy, he's like, they don't have a clue what to do with you. You are the most marketable person they have. He said, you ought to just go out these groceries and say, these are some corny ideas, but he said, you got to just take like a wheelbarrow, full of mouth, just wheel them out and just dump them down and just say, don't care about them, just climb in and just dismantle people. Before there was a Goldberg, he was pitching that idea.
That's where I think every time whenever I can find your matches online, I'm always really happy because I watch these matches and it seemed obvious. Just let you go out there, rip a guy apart, and that's that. Eventually, you'd wrestle somebody like Steve Austin. I don't know. That's what it seemed like to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's, like I said, I was not part of the creative team. As a matter of fact, after the first few weeks of just being with the WWF, Cornette walked by and he said, I don't know what you're doing. He says, but keep on doing it. He says, all the boys are nervous around you because they don't know how to take you. I go, Jim, I says, I know what professional wrestling is all about. I'm here just to see that they're doing. I said, but the fact is, but then he goes, what he says, what they said, the scary part is, they know that you can turn fantasy into reality, and that scares them.
There was this moment on Raw, and I can remember, I was like, I think I was 17 at the time, and I just went, I went nuts for it. Triple H, one of DX had lost a match, and Triple H issued an open challenge, and you came out. And I remember I just lost it because I thought you were going to kill Triple H. And Cornette's trying to stop you, and I think you choke him out or something. And was that ever going to lead to anything?
Yes, I mean, honestly, I don't even remember that item right there. You sure that was me?
I am very definite because I can remember you... There was this match between DOA and New Age Outlaws, and this is going to show how I have an encyclopedic memory of wrestling, if I could use it for anything else. But it made this challenge. He said, nobody kills my buzz. He said, I want somebody to come out here so I can kick their ass. And your music came on, and you come out, and I'm thinking it's going to be a fight, but Cornette's trying to stop you from going out there, and you end up beating him up or something, and you just walk to the back. And I always wondered if it was going to lead to a match or something, but I guess not.
Yeah, no, I just simply chalk it up to the fact that they did not have controlling elements over me And back then I was not a member of their chapstick club. That's kind of ironic, because I at the same time that Jim asked me, or made the comment whatever I was doing, bordered on nervous. I go, Jim, I said, I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting back and I'm watching theater unfold before me. And he goes, well, what do you mean by theater? I said, what is professional wrestling? It is a heavily political, motivated type industry. Why should this guy win and the other guy lose? And most of this, you see these so-called stars who are lobbyists. I just finally referred to them as the Chapstick Club. And it's kind of funny that less than a year or so later, that's when all this came out with the Kiss My Ass Club. That was my whole reference of the Chapstick Club, is that all out there kissing old Vince's ass, or the various agents or the creative team. Vince Russo was one of those.
Oh man, I don't know the guy, but oh man, I just associate him with that last year in WCW, just putting themselves all over TV. What do you think about that when people do that? Like, is somebody in charge putting themselves all over TV?
I don't know. I mean, I see that in the independent scene on the side more. You've got a promoter who also wants to be the current champion, and then now when you have guys that are in the creative team that want to be part of it all. I mean, it makes sense to throw Vince in the mix and stuff like that, but Vince Russo should have never been in that.
Okay, now one thing I was always wondering about, because I was watching a bunch of 98 the other day, and I was basically looking for your matches. I was looking for your matches because I found the Tarzan Goto one. I loved it, so I just looked through all the WWF stuff I could find. And how come you and Ken Shamrock never had a big match? In wrestling.
We never had the third match?
You never had a big match in pro wrestling. And that always seemed to be like a big thing.
I don't know. Again, that's part of the aspect where the WWF dropped the ball on that, because basically it was a perfect thing to market, because Ken had beat me once, I had beat Ken once. So basically the rubber match, that was something to build towards. I mean, literally, I never spoke to Ken's representatives, and basically Ken's got, and went back and forth, and he's agreed to do match number three with me. Because we are going to do this in the mixed martial arts, but Ken's still got to abide. He's had some sanctions against him because he tested positive for steroids. I don't know how many months back, but he had 1 year suspension.
So you're planning on doing an MMA fight with Ken Shamrock at some point?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's part of my retirement tour. I'm doing my own self-directed retirement tour. I'm doing other matches, but I've got half a dozen matches I would like to materialize before I call it quits.
Do you have a set date for when you want to retire?
I don't think people pretty much have me there. Somewhere in the next, say, 2 to 3 years, I should be out of it. But, it all depends. And right now, if they end up coming through with a master's division, I may stick around for a little bit longer.
Okay, going back to WWF, you had this match with Owen Hart in Detroit, where he did that tombstone that he did on Steve Austin, and they acted like your neck was broke. Do you know what that was supposed to lead to? Because it seemed like
it was supposed to lead to a few different things right there, but again, that was one of the things that was particularized about it. It was kind of funny because, television for the WWF, and they're showing little clips of me with a neck piece on something. I don't know, something just kind of got changed, I think that might have been his realization that they were to put a belt on me because they had no real control mechanisms on me in the first place. But I could work for anybody.
Was there a provision in the contract about working for WCW?
No.
Oh, really?
No, I was not exclusive. I could work for literally for anybody, including WCW. And I think that's kind of what it boiled down to. They were literally putting any kind of a title or any kind of major push because what control mechanism did they have on me to where, I could work for them on a Monday night and then be somewhere else. So, as I said to you before, I just don't think that they're used to working with a person like myself where your word should mean something and a handshake should mean something. Pretty much old school on that type of stuff, and that really does not fall into the realm of professional wrestling, really, whatsoever. It is a very cutthroat type of an industry, very politically motivated.
I remember when you came back. I remember I had lost my cable for a few months, and when I started watching again, you were feuding with Steve Blackman. How was Steve Blackman to work with?
I mean, it was, unique. I mean, it's where, the road agents, they were really impressed with how much heat I ended up getting out of the crowd itself, because basically I took on the role of being a heel. And without cutting any kind of promos or like that, just the heat that I had, they were, the road agents were impressed with it. I don't know if they elaborate on to upper management, but I think if had they had they seen it, they, you know, they might want to have kept me on. But I mean, at that point in time, when I ended up down to my last couple weeks there with the company, that's when I was doing my fusion there with Steve Blackman. He was good to work with him. He, has a martial arts background and stuff like that, so again, I could do a few things with him that I couldn't do with some of the people, like with Owen being an amateur as a background. I could even do some more unique type of things with him as opposed to just standard professional wrestling.
Was your last show the Royal Rumble?
I really couldn't even do that. I had to really think back and have to look back to see if that was my last TV exposure. I really couldn't tell you offhand.
Okay, I was going to ask you, because I remember reading about this. Were you on the 1980 Olympic team?
No, I was an alternate in 1984 and 1988. I mean, I tried out for my very first Olympic team back as a senior in high school in 1976.
Okay, I must have got that mixed up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was 1984 and 1988.
Hey, I was going to ask you another thing that I had read in a magazine years ago. It was one of the Pro Wrestling Illustrated ones. There was something about you had wrestled Dory Funk Jr., and they said something that there was like an altercation that when somebody, like you start, like there was an altercation between you two in the back or something, or signing autographs.
I don't know if I really want to talk about that aspect of it, because that was not a good situation.
All right, well, that's fine, sir.
Yeah, it was just something that should not have happened, but it did. I would rather let those pussy egos, time heals all wounds, I don't even want to really drag that one out.
All right, sir. Do you remember when you found out you were going to lose the NWA title to Naoya Ogawa?
I don't even really recall how much lead time I had was given on that situation, but I do believe that I went right to Japan, and that's where the strap was lost, right there in front of a Japanese audience.
Did they tell you?
Yeah, it was starting to get just a lot more exposure on an international basis, because the NWA, NWA was almost non-existent when I first put the strap on, and then I ended up getting a lot of exposure both nationally and internationally. And it meant a lot, actually, the NWA means almost more outside of the United States than what it does inside of the United States, because most people, especially as time marches on, it just becomes more and more just in the people's memories. Because they only have the two products to watch, and that is WWE and TNA. So, I mean, I know I'm jumping around the conversation a little bit, but that was... And that was at a time when to get more international exposure for the NWA, and do I remember exactly how much lead time? No.
Did it bother you any to lose it?
Well, no, I mean, not that it bothered me. I mean, that's kind of the things that are going to go with professional wrestling. You know, they're going to put it on the strap when they're going on various individuals, but hopefully they're individuals that can carry the strap and bring it more recognition and basically give it the prestige that it really deserves. I mean, there have been, some past champions that I was in it regardless and then really had no true capabilities or respect from maybe some of the other wrestlers in the industry and stuff like that. Just it was, again, the world of politics and the politician, that's all.
You worked some matches for UWFI in the early 90s, didn't you?
Yes.
How did they contact you?
I was originally contacted through, Doug Gilbert.
Do you remember do you think any of your matches there were memorable? I haven't been able to find too many of them online.
It's a unique match. Witnessing some unique things. I mean, that's where I always go back to say that just when I think I've seen everything that professional wrestling world will throw yet something new at me. I mean, it's just...
I was looking through some of your records for MMA fights, and I noticed some of them took place in 1998. Did the WWF have anything to say about you doing those?
No, I mean, it was, because I had no technical sensitivity, I could do almost anything that I wanted to do. I mean, WWF came to both Ken Shamrock and myself at basically the same time. Ken went to work almost a year before I did, because he had an exclusive to that company. To me, it's like, I negotiated terms that I was not exclusive, because I was, I was a much older athlete at that time, and I was not going to put all my eggs into one basket. And then all of a sudden, if I was there just for a couple of years, and then, my career came to an end with them, then I had to restart over with everything else. I thought, no, I can keep a blended schedule going. That's kind of what I still do even to this day. I keep a very well blended schedule going.
That's really amazing, because they never, that shows how much they really wanted you. They give you that type of deal, because I can't think of anybody else that ever got that.
But at the same token, they gave it to me, but then there was nothing ever done with it, though, too. So, when you look at what has a Kurt Angle been able to achieve, a former amateur wrestler that has kind of gone into the ranks, or the Brock Lesnar, what did he mean? I'm not saying that I would have been in that same category, but who's to say I wouldn't have been? Who would have said that I wouldn't have been better than what I know these guys would have been? I mean, I know how I conduct myself in a professional manner, and in some ways, I would say that I would have been head shoulders above them in certain aspects, and they're probably head shoulders above me in other aspects. Whether that would be pro or con, well, time will tell.
You won back the NWA title back, 2002 from Shinya Hashimoto.
Yeah, that was a very unique situation, because in the beginning, it was just Steve Corino and I were supposed to go in and just do a tag match. And then, the time that, that contacted me, and that I flew over there, it went from being a tag match to a single match to now Hashimoto agreed that I'm the person to bring the strap back to the United States. So it boiled down to him. And before, Hashimoto, they'd asked him to drop the strap, and he did not feel that whoever was carrying the strap at that time, I don't remember who it was not worthy of it, or what they wanted him to drop the strap too. So that's what I said when I came involved. I mean, it was, he agreed to do it with me.
Okay, so it was the last minute thing?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Why is it TNA didn't want to wait for you to defend the title on their show? Because it seems like that the first pro wrestling match between you and Ken Shamrock for the NWA title would have been better than what they ended up doing.
Well, you would have to ask the powers to be, their creative team, to know why they did what they did. I mean, I told them I could not be at their event. I already had something scheduled. Even though I did not have a contract onto it, I said, my word and my handshake mean something. Basically, I cannot be at the very first event. I could have been to the next 3 or 4 weeks after that on a Wednesday night pay-per-view. Sure, I could have been there, but not for that one. It had been advertised. It was up on my website. I was going to be at this event, and I fulfilled my obligations. But again, professionalism just does not have a good reputation in conducting the most basic principles of business 101.
I have another question for my editor. You got Don Fry started in mixed martial arts?
Correct.
Were you surprised how he became a wrestler?
No, not at all.
Okay, what did you think of his fight with Takayama?
Well, I have never seen that fight to this day, although I have had numerous people regale me into what they were doing to where I basically probably know every aspect of the match, and then some people even thought it was me that was in this match, because Don and I do bear a bit of a resemblance towards each other. I tell people it's just the mustache, but they think it's a little bit more than that.
I could see that, where if you were kind of glancing, if you weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
Okay, he had a feud with Ken Shamrock. Okay, what did you think of it?
The feud that he had, there was truly a dislike for each other.
Okay, so...
And it accumulated they ended up having a match, I think it was in Japan, I think, Ken had an ankle lock onto Don, but Don had done enough earlier on in the match, and endured as the clock kind of took Don out right there, but Don ended up winning that match. Very good action.
Okay, I wanted to ask you something about your fighting career. What was the toughest fight you ever had?
Well, honestly, the toughest fight on it that would oppose me would be someone with amateur wrestling background, because that's the strength that I bring in there. So if I went against someone else that had a strong grappling background, we would start to negate each other. And now it came down to the secondary skills, the striking, the hands, the knees, the missions. I mean, that's the secondary skills that you had to really rely upon. So just to pick out one individual, I really could just pick out just one individual, but I would simply pick out the category of a grappler.
Okay.
And then when I look at, like, championship belts, one, the most prestigious belt that I hold, and it's one of my smallest ones, is the Ultimate belt. And the Ultimate belt, it was still during the No Holds Barred era, so you had the 8-man tournament, you had to face 3 opponents, and it was still just basically the 2 rules, no biting, no high gouging. No gloves. All gloves were optional at that point in time. That was one of the newest rules that they came in with. And basically, a 2-hour pay-per-view in Denver, Colorado, over a mile-high elevation. I was inside that octagon cage for just over 1 hour between my 3 opponents. So that was, like I said, for me, that was probably one of the most pinnacle points of my career, to train the way I did in preparation for this and to spend that much time in that cage with all the rules and elements that were given to the fighters in the Ultimate Fighting Championships or No Holds Barred fighting.
What's your favorite pro wrestling match you've done?
Well, I actually have to think about that with a lot of it. John, you're actually the first person that's ever asked me about my first that question. I actually have to think about that. I mean, nothing just jumps out at me right off hand.
Do you run a school? You mentioned that the other day, that you run a school. Is it just for MMA fighters, or is it also, or do you also train them in pro wrestling?
No, I mean, a number of things. Yes, to the first two categories. I bought my facility back in 1991, and it was, first off, my first love was amateur wrestling. So, I mean, I did it to do, wanted to set up an amateur wrestling training facility on a year-round type basis. And then when I ended up getting involved with professional wrestling, I kind of seen how disorganized it was, and there wasn't really a rhyme or reason to a lot of the practices of that. And being a coach at a couple of different universities, I knew how to put lesson plans together, work out routines together that would make sense. And so basically, I utilized my background and then just put all these different types of professional wrestling workouts together. And then we added professional wrestling, that was our next thing we added, the amateur wrestling base. Then we added, No Holds Barred fighting was then after that. Because again, that was all brand new. There was no one had a thought as to how practices should be conducted. But again, I just utilized my background and put together what I thought was the best things at that time. And then throughout the course of time, I mean, additional classes have been added for boxing and for kids' classes. And so, I mean, I have a number of other instructors that teach things. Even like in my absence, like right now I'm on the road, I have people that oversee my classes for me and make sure that the same quality is conducted.
Do you have any students that you think are going to, I mean, are there any, I know you can't really play favorites, but are there any in particular that you think are going to be big in the future?
Well, I mean, one of the people that came to my place, he first had Monte Brown, also known as, and we're talking professional thing, also known as the Alpha Male. He came up through my facility there, ended up working on an independent scene, and then was picked up by TNA, and then, they went to the point of actually, merchandising and action figures, and then he only did that for a short period of time, and then basically he's kind of like dropped out of the professional wrestling scene. And again, I heard for different reasons, I heard that there was something that the tragedy happened inside of his family, and that he stepped in there to help out his family. Now, on a mixed martial arts basis, I've had a number of guys that have come up through the ranks and have been involved in either the Ultimate Fighting Championships or other major organizations inside of the training side of the United States. Probably the most notable, I mean, other than like a Don Maia help. But I mean, the real thing is, we look at the geographical logistics. Don lived in Arizona, and I lived in Michigan, so when I was in Arizona, I mean, made Don part of my training camps, and I helped him out, but I always say that Don, I might help Don get his foot in the door, but Don has helped keep that door open on his Rashad Evans, probably more recently, has, went to the point of knocking out Chuck Liddell, but that same token ended up getting knocked out by a name called Machida. But Rashad was a former amateur at Michigan State, came down, did the first of his shorts, trained in my place. He did the first amateur matches on my company, Danger Zone, and did his first pro matches on my company, Danger Zone, before. And then I was helping him get on the Ultimate Fighter show. Other people in the world of mixed martial arts and knows about fighting that have kind of come through and have been part of some of the Danger Zone shows in the past, like Rampage Jackson, Rich Sean Sherk, Rich Clemente, and I know I'm missing a few other names because I can't think of all this off the top of my head. I'm very proud of my company, the Danger Zone, and what it has done in order to have helped other professional athletes, or I should say amateur athletes, either further their amateur career or result in the pro careers.
Do you have anything coming up that you would like to mention here?
I guess part of the big thing is that what I would say is that there's a lot of people, they may only know me from professional wrestling or from the mixed martial arts or my amateur wrestling career, but that's still just a very small portion of what I have been involved with. I have so much more of what I do that I always promote just going to my website and just seeing and checking that out, because that think they would be amazed at all the different things that I have done and the success ratio that I have had in all the various industries. The DanTiffin.com.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me.
You are very welcome, Victor, and I do appreciate once again for what you did for me and that video tape there.
All right. You have a good day.